And welcome to this week's Talk of the Rock. My name is Jared Griffin. And every now and then on Talk of the Rock, we like to bring in our local reporters to talk about the news as a way to help you, our listeners, contextualize some of these big stories a little bit further, but also, you know, peel back the veneer, the veil, I guess, of about what it is that reporters do, and kind of demystify the press and the media and reporting and journalism just a bit. And so coming up at, towards the end of 2023, we're going to be doing a kind of our annual news in review episode today. So to help us talk about the news in review over the past year, we have a KMXT reporter, Brian Vinois. Brian, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us on.
And this is your, I guess, first anniversary, because I think about a year ago, yeah, we were your very first Talk of the Rock, I think, was doing a news in review or year in review, and we were introducing you to to Kodiak.
Yeah, I remember I got here, and then I think it was the first story that I did was Kirsten sent me in tennis shoes to report on a 6-car pileup on Reznov, and I was like, oh, I am from Alaska. I should have been more prepared for this.
Right. As you go ice skating down Mill Bay or whatever on your tennis shoes in the middle of winter. We also have former KMXT news director and current fisheries. I should have asked your title for Undercurrents.
Yes, I'm the senior reporter, and I report on Alaska's fisheries for Undercurrent News.
Okay, there we go. Kirsten Dobroff.
And I'm also the worst boss ever, because I sent Brian down, and he forgot to add that there.
Yeah,
and
yes.
I don't think he actually, to add to that, I think he trudged through the field behind our station, if anyone's familiar with that. So he definitely had a lot of snow and water and ice in his shoes, and it was a memorable first story.
The cops gave me a ride back, so that was
fun.
Oh, they
did? And the host of the Alaska Fisheries Report and our morning news and noon news host, Terry Haynes, is back in the studio with us.
It's am I on?
Oh, wait. Hold on. Is that not 10? There we go.
Is this thing
there
on?
There we go. Now you're on.
Well, you can't say the noon news. It's not that you can't say it. You just can't say it.
Noon.
True.
I think it used
That's
to be
true.
The noon news.
Noon news.
The midday report
midday
is
report.
Much easier to say.
It is. And it sounds more professional. Yes.
Well, yeah, you don't want to give yourself anything else to trip on when you're on the air. The
right.
Noon news.
Noon news. We should start to spell it N-E-W-N.
Right.
N-E-W-S. Noon news. Noon news. There we go. All right. Well, let's go ahead and start off by talking about the elephant in the room. Usually we like to kind of start and go back at January and work our way towards December, but huge news dropped last week to kind of bookend this really interesting year in fisheries. So let's talk about the elephant in the room, and that's Trident's announcement.
Yeah, I've been following that pretty closely. It ate pretty much all of last week for me, just kind of fielding calls. Seems pretty much anyone I know who sees me and knows what I do for work is like, hey, so what's the deal with Trident? And I'm like, I put everything I know into the story. It's just crazy that, you know, they're putting this huge divestment away from Kodiak and Petersburg and Ketchikan. False Pass were the big four that they're selling. They're also selling the historic cannery in Naknek and a few of their support facilities in Chignik too. So it's kind of this huge move that they're doing, but they're also building a brand new plant on Alaska at the same time. So it's kind of this really interesting intermediate spot for them right now, that they're just have all these plants, but, you know, selling some of them off.
And it's a little too early for us to understand exactly what the economic impacts will be locally in Kodiak, right?
For sure. And I think it's also leaves the questions like, if they do find a solid buyer with a good reputation and an investment in the community, then there might be little to no change too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something to keep in mind, but it definitely leaves a lot of those questions like, well, what happens to Tanner crabs in, you know, less than a month from now? what happens with pollock fisheries coming up too. The A season is about to start, I think, pretty soon. And it's just, it's hard to get them to commit to anything because they just made the announcement. They haven't said if they have buyers. They haven't said anything about the seasons coming up when I've been talking to them. So it's just, there's a lot that's unconfirmed mm-hmm. about the next even month or so.
Yeah. What are you hearing over on your side, Kirsten?
Obviously my job, I've been reporting on just fisheries for the last 4 months. So I think it's no surprise to anybody in the industry on the fishing side or the processing side that prices have cratered across species and ex vessel and wholesale prices. I think Trident surprised everybody to see such a big company selling off facilities like Kodiak, announcing that in the Gulf of Alaska. I'm reporting a story. I was out of town last week down south visiting family, and you know, my phone started blowing up with this announcement. So I've been working on a story that I'm planning to run on Undercurrent probably tomorrow or the next day, just kind of following up on what comes next. But I think I was talking to someone this morning for it, and I think they brought up a good point too, that Trident also owns other assets in downtown, like the apartment complex. So that will be interesting to see, if a buyer does come in quickly, are they able to pick up other assets? Does that open up other housing options for Kodiak workforce? And then, you know, the big thing is that the market is not great. A lot of companies are having a tough time right now, particularly companies in Alaska. So who has the money to buy the facility? And I don't think that's clear at this point.
And there's been a lot of chatter about perhaps a non-US company coming in too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be either a big company that feels like they can weather it right now. But like I said, there's been a lot of rumors. There's been a lot of speculation. I don't think it's clear who would be the buyer for the facility at this point.
When I've been talking to economists, the way that they phrase things, like, at first it's shocking, but over the history of Alaska's fisheries, which is now just about a century, he was talking about how processors do move facilities, they'll sell things off, and sometimes new players emerge. So it'll be interesting to see if there is a smaller processor too that's like, you know, we want to go from just salmon to being a little bit more diverse, and so let's go to Kodiak where they do process stuff like crabs and other fish other than just, you know, salmon in the summer. So it could be interesting to see if it is a big company or if a small one wants to take that bet,
or if it's anyone.
That's
because
the big question.
That's the real question. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, this Trident story is the capper of the big story of the year, which is the cratering of the entire seafood market worldwide. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody really saw it coming. I think you see declines, and we've seen in Alaska, we've never seen anything like this, where across the board all species have cratered to the point where it's almost not worth it to even go fishing. And markets have to the point where during the end of the salmon season, processors were essentially saying, we're just not buying fish anymore. Right. That's the scary thing about Trident pulling out. It's not so much that they're trying to sell their facilities or that they might not own those facilities anymore. They're saying, well, eventually down the road, you know, we'd like to, you know, divest this. They're just saying right now, they're saying we want to sell our facilities and these things. But what they're really saying is we're not interested in providing a market in any of these places anymore. So for a fisherman here who is in that was your market for 70 boats, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, will there be a market now for those 70 boats? And I think it's a scary question considering what we did see at the end of salmon season, and with no perceivable end in sight of these low prices across the board in the fisheries market. I mean, will someone step in and fill that place in the market? If they do, who will it be? And will it mean that fishermen are suddenly at a big disadvantage in demanding a good price for their product?
Right. we could probably talk about this for the entire, and maybe we will. Maybe we'll have a whole Talk of the Rock soon to talk about all of this. But we got other things to get in, and kind of branching off just a little bit of what Terry said was going into about the market and prices. 2023 started off with a huge, maybe it was some kind of bellwether in a way of the big, was it Tanner Crab
right.
Strike. And Kirsten, you covered that one.
Yeah, yeah, that was right at the beginning of 2023. I mean, Tanner Crab season in Kodiak kicks off January 15th, and, you know, over 200 boats didn't go fishing because of disputes with processors. And I think to your point that that was kind of the first indication that 2023 was changing in terms of the market. But it will be interesting to see how that plays into this year. I haven't heard anything about negotiations at this point with process between processors and fishermen. But I'm sure it's top of mind, although I have talked to processors who are looking forward to the Tanner crab season. You know, Red King crab did really well on the market, and there was a lot of excitement about it. So I think it will be interesting to see how that plays into this year's fishery as well.
And the Tanner crabs also weren't the only ones that had protests, too. Over in Bristol Bay, listeners might remember that I actually got my start on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, and I was working pretty closely with the team again this year, helping them out with edits and planned coverage. And that was pretty huge. There hadn't been a protest over Bristol Bay's sockeye prices in a long time, and I did a story this fall that it was, if you account for inflation, it's the lowest price that sockeye fishermen got in decades. So it kind of adds to that whole idea that the state of markets are historically bad right now. It's hard to know, like, what is next year's, especially salmon season's going to look like, because that's one of the biggest ones for Alaska.
And that was a big theme at Comfish that you covered, Comfish back in March, that kind of also what Terry brought up, that there's we're reaching, or we're at crisis levels of species decline, which we've seen. And yeah, sockeye halibut is going back down. Are they cutting halibut again, perhaps?
It's been discussed, but the quota won't come out, or the catch limits won't come out until later in January.
Yeah, okay. So, okay. So,
but yeah, that feels like an eternity ago.
Right,
that,
it does.
You know, I think I was running back and forth to kind of do the year in review, I guess, that from a news perspective, things break like that. And it's like, you know, I was running back and forth to the studio at times at 9 o'clock at night because we needed to turn something around on it for our local audience that it means so much to in the state audience. But also NPR wanted stories about it. You know, you have 200 boats that say they won't go fishing, and that's huge.
Yeah.
So that was a really interesting one to work on. And then obviously they did go fishing. It was a great year, you know. Crabs were looking good. It was a huge amount of crabs, and this year is also looking good for that. So yeah, it's was definitely an interesting story to be reporting on.
Well, you know, the difference in the two fisheries allows the crab fishermen to not go fishing. I mean, they can say, well, we're not going to go fishing. The crab will still be there for quite a while, and we'll be able to fish them. In Bristol Bay, I mean, just the year before last was the first year they ever posted a price before the season. That was Peter Pan. But, I mean, traditionally, they don't know their price until after the season. So, I mean, the Bristol Bay protest was a little tougher for the fishermen to get any kind of leverage when they've already delivered all their fish. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's going to change for the guys who drive all the way from Kodiak to Bristol Bay. I mean, they might think about that pretty hard this next coming season.
For sure. Okay, let's move on from fisheries. We're only halfway through, and we've only reached March. But there were some also earlier in the year some big, I guess, kind of related infrastructure issues. St. Hermans, you know, the harbor here in Kodiak, and then Kirsten, did you break this story? The Valdez Marine Terminal, that safety report that came out that. It was pretty huge. It seems to, I don't know if anything has come of that.
Right. Yeah. I don't think I broke it. Yeah. I think ADN, Anchorage Daily News, had a story just before I did it around the same time that I did. But yes, I did cover that. As I've kind of stepped into just fisheries, I haven't followed up on what has come of that. But it was it wasn't a great report about safety and perceived issues with the infrastructure that could, you know, some people saying that maybe it was at risk of an imminent spill or some sort of other issue that would jeopardize the water in that area. So that was a big report that came out in April. So I haven't done any follow-up on what that would look like, but that was, you know, it's of course critical importance to people mm-hmm. in coastal communities across the state, including in Kodiak.
And then, Terry, you're probably the expert here. Kodiak Harbor has been getting a lot of, I think, of attention lately.
And with good reason. It needs to be replaced. It went from needing repair to needing replacement. And the bill right now looks like $60 million. And the question is not, you know, how to do it and, you know, what we need. We kind of know that. The question is, you know, in what way will we pay for it? And if you take all the 6,000 citizens of Kodiak and split up $60 million, it's a lot to ask people to write a check for. So, you know, traditionally, it is ports and harbor infrastructure that's, you know, linked to our transportation infrastructure statewide and nationally. And so we're all competing with infrastructure money that is out there. Mm-hmm. And we've seen some of it be awarded to other harbors across the state so far already. So far, nothing for Kodiak, but there are other ways we can, you know, we can finance this. At the recent Alaska Municipal League conference, we learned about some very, very low interest loans that you can take out that go for a long term, and that then you, if you do get funding after that, you can just use that funding to pay down the loan. So at least would allow us to get started on the harbor, because it is crucial that we begin very, very soon. Our harbor is in its last remaining stages, and I think a lot of people know that we have pilings that are literally falling over, and we're about to come to storm season, and the last one, we lost floats during that storm season. So we were losing capability in the harbor at a time when we can't really ask fishermen for more money to help repair the harbor, and in fact, we're talking about giving average fishermen a break on some of their harbor slip fees, because we realize it's a tough time for just about everybody right now.
Yeah. Moving on into the summer, we got a preliminary picture of what education budget is going to look like, and then this surprise story from Karlik.
Yeah, there was a lot of education things to report on in June, because that also was a Dr. Mecca, the superintendent, finished her first year or two. And then, yeah, there was the education funding. They did get one-time funding, and then that got cut in half by the guy sitting at the desk in Juneau. and I think a lot of the districts were really frustrated. I know here they basically decided that we're just going to have to take this out of fund balance, because if they did anything else, it would come at the cost of the quality of education that they would be able to provide for the island students. They've, in talks with the superintendent, they've attritioned about as much staff as they can while continuing to maintain the quality of education they've had over the last how many years. So it's just a question of what's things going to look like for the upcoming legislative session. And then obviously this thing's Karlik also was a huge expenditure too. That was about, I think, $80,000 or $70,000 that the school invested. But then, you know, the families left. So, and they left before the school count ended. So they were pretty much just out all that money. I haven't followed up on it, but it seemed like a lot of that was just going to have to come out of the fund balance too. So it's in a dire state of fisheries. It's also a dire state for Alaska's education too. So those are going to be things I'm going to have to keep a close eye on, especially in the upcoming legislation. And it was just kind of feels like a whirlwind for a lot of things right now.
So how was it? This is your first time kind of covering the Kodiak education beat. You're talking with, you've got administrators, you're talking with village representatives, you're talking with school board members, you're talking with teachers. As a reporter, and anybody can chime in on this, when you have like different stakeholders over something like either funding or a school opening, school closing, what's that like for you as a reporter trying to balance all those different voices?
I think the hardest thing is to sort out who's in charge and which one is the authority over which, because everyone has opinions on every part of everything. So it's just a matter
who's the decision maker,
who gets final say on, like, when they did send a teacher to Karlik, there was a little bit of back and forth on where was that teacher going to live. Was there a third house there? And then the school district decided, no, we're going to renovate the building out there. and then have the teacher live in the school. And then that was the decision that the school district came to, and I had to verify that. So it was kind of a lot of that fact-checking, making sure that I'm reporting on the reality of what's going on, not what people are projecting, mm-hmm. like this is what's going to happen. So that was the hardest thing for me to sort through when I was going over a lot of the stuff, especially with Karlik was kind of the one that I was like, oh, no, I need to make sure I'm getting all this right because, you know, I want to make sure that people are being fair to each other and that the reality is being accurately represented.
Yeah. Kirsten, how do you keep that balance?
Well, I think what's always hard as a reporter is, you know, when you approach stories, people are sometimes really emotionally, a lot of times very emotionally invested in what you're reporting in. Sometimes you have somebody tell you something that, you know, is a really a huge part of their life. And, you know, you're also talking to somebody that might also have a lot of skin in the game that comes at it from a totally different perspective. And so I'm always pretty honest with people. You know, I sit and I listen. That is my job. It's to listen. But I always tell people that I don't have opinions about these things. I'm just trying to learn as much as I can, because the more I learn, the better and more accurate and all-encompassing picture I can present about whatever it is I'm reporting on. And so that's always, but it's tough. You know, sometimes, like I said, you're talking to somebody who is, this is what they live and breathe, and they feel so, you know, it's a part of them. And you might also be talking to somebody who says something that's totally refutes that. And, you know, you have to kind of just say, I'm not picking sides. That's not my job. It's not my job to have an opinion about any of these things. Mm-hmm. It's just my job to learn as much as I can so I can present as much information for whoever is listening or reading to decide what they think about this situation. And that can be hard.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Later on in the summer, there were a couple of tragic plane crashes, one near Old Harbor, and then there was a mid-air collision over Katmai, yeah. Right? And so those types of stories come up every now and then, plane crashes here in Kodiak, but those were happened pretty close to each other and were kind of personal for a lot of people here in the community. So who covered that one? Who covered those?
I think that was me.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we both did. I kind of took the initial and stepped away from it and let Brian, kind of coached Brian through it, but let him handle some of the more specific reporting, particularly with the NTSB reports.
Yeah.
Initial NTSB reports.
Yeah, I think it was just, at the time, it felt like a lot of the people in the community already knew who was affected, who was injured, who ended up dying. And then it was just kind of hard for me, I think, because a lot of people would say colloquially, oh, it was this person. I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to cite this one person off of Facebook. I want to hear it either from a family member or from, you know, like the troopers or something, because the troopers don't put out names until they've contacted mm-hmm. next of kin. So it's a matter of finding that ethics of like, okay, well, there is information that needs to get out, and then there's information that we need to hold until, you know, families have had the time to process and grieve and, you know, try to make sense of their own feelings before mm-hmm. they want to talk to a reporter. So that was kind of one thing. And I believe that was the hard one for the plane crash from Old Harbor. And, but the mid-air collision over Katmai, I remember it ended with injuries. I don't think it led to any deaths.
I don't think it was fatal, no.
Yeah. Yeah, so that one was a little bit easier to report on. It was a little interesting just, you know, trying to report on that without a lot of contact from either the entities. But, you know, I got to know Clint Johnson with the NTSB pretty well in a span of like a month or two. So
okay. Let's end. We've got about 5 minutes left, I guess. And let's talk about some more heartwarming stories. There was the dedication of the National Guard, the Armory building to Daniel Lee Harmon that you covered, Kirsten.
Yeah, I loved reporting that story. I loved talking to his family. I loved talking to the community members that have really taken it upon themselves to remember him. And I just, you know, it's so important to understand you know, to remember people from the past, particularly people in Kodiak who were born and raised here. And I really enjoyed reporting that story, and hopefully am adding to something that's out there that remembers his legacy and what he meant to the island and people from here. And that was actually my last feature before I left. So that was kind of a good note for me to leave on. I think that it was a story that I felt like meant a lot to people, and hopefully it did.
And then finally, let's talk about you two reported on your very first middle of the night tsunami evacuation, which, you know, at the time, you know, it's exhilarating, it's fun, but there was also a hit and run fatality during that night. So walk us through what it's like to report on those things.
For me, I had literally just laid down and closed my eyes and felt my phone go off. And I'm like, oh, that's not just a regular text message, is it? And I glance at my phone and I'm like, oh, no. And so I looked over to my girlfriend and was like, I think you need to get the cat. I'll wake up our friend who just landed that day. He's like, I'm sorry, you've been flying since 3 a.m. I'm going to take you to the station so that we can, you know, be out of the tsunami inundation zone. And I ended up being the first one here, got a quick reader to go on the air and just be like, hey, there is a tsunami warning. And that was kind of at least the beginning part for me, and getting a hold of Carson being like, hey, are you on your way? I'm on my own here, Jenna.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to lie. I don't always like the subject of breaking news. You know, it can be tragic and hard, as it was in this instance. But I also love breaking news. I think that's part of just me as a reporter. Mm-hmm. You know, I think like quarterbacks have their 2-minute drill, and like news directors and reporters have breaking news. Like I had to like do breathing to exercises to like get my adrenaline to come down when I was coming up here. 'Cause it's like, you don't know the severity of something. We're still collecting information. Obviously nobody knew at that point that it was going to be called off. But I'd covered a fair amount of wildfires in Colorado. I'd covered a mudslide that trapped part of the highway in Colorado and trapped several drivers. And so I think, like, I don't know, every breaking news situation is different. There's no perfect blueprint for it. But I do think for the station it was important for the news team. I think we fine-tuned some things in that. And I think
we do every time. Yeah.
It was a good learning opportunity at the same time.
Well, we have about 1 minute left, so you've got about maybe 15, 20 seconds each. Brian, 2024, what are you looking forward to reporting? What do you expect to be reporting on in 2024?
Well, in 2024, my main focus is going to be Trident for at least the next month or so. Mm. But I've got some other fun things going on. I'm going to be following like the Cannon Marketplace. They just had the bakery open. Mm-hmm. I'm working on getting a hold of them and doing something. And obviously they have like the stores that are there now, and there's going to be some more events and things that I'm going there. Those are going to be the big two things for me that I'm keeping my eyes on, for at least that I can think of right now.
Cool. Kirsten, what's on the horizon for you?
Well, as a fish reporter, fish in Alaska. But I think it's I'm really glad to be focusing on fish in Kodiak at such a crucial time for both fishermen and people in the processing industry. And hopefully we'll have good news to report as the year progresses, but that will be my focus in the near and distant future is fish.
All right. Well, thank you once again, Kirsten and Brian and Terry, for doing a little news year in review with us here on Talk the Rock. Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. And thanks for listening.